thought leader and influencer. This is Luba Mayegiso and the Africa Report.
Luba Mayegiso, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Howard. I'm very well, thank you. And how are you?
Yes, I'm excellent. Thank you for asking. And nice to be back on air. Nice to be chatting to you back on air. Although your topic this morning is an intriguing one. Bukhle is very excited about hearing your take on this. And we are talking, for those of you who didn't hear the announcement earlier, or when I was telling you what we were going to be chatting about. Luba is going to be chatting about an alternative look at the source of gender-based violence in the black community in South Africa. So, Luba, I know it's an important topic, but it's actually quite a dangerous one, isn't it?
It's very dangerous, Howard, but I figure you should be used to this anyway.
Oh, stop it, and, Luba. Geez, I knew you were going to
Howard, Howard, stop being sensitive. So here's the thing. I don't think, you know, we're going to discuss and say, here's the real cause and solution. But I just want to throw some things out there and say, you know, are we looking at this properly, or are there other factors that we haven't looked at? And I admit that we are going to get some flack for it. So I want to put that up front. But, you know, I'm not trying to diminish or play down GBV in any way. But let me put it this way to you. Let me open by saying, generally people point to patriarchy, the perception of men that we have about women, our sense of entitlement. So that will be single, that these are the leading causes why we have patriarchy. And we can't deny it's there. But the question that I kept asking myself is, the strict definition of patriarchy, you know, in the African culture has always been, you know, the eldest male would be the head of the family. Yes, there was a sense of entitlement. So if I were to look at, say, for instance, my mother, who has an older sister, an older brother, and had a younger brother. When, you know, my grandpa passed away and they were discussing arrangements, my uncle, who's the oldest, said to me plain that your mum and your aunt are girls and they have no say in the matter. And your uncle is, you know, basically Gwengo, which is a lighty. So his view doesn't count. They are from the head and therefore my view counts. Mm-hmm. So I'll admit certainly that, you know, you have that hierarchy. But the question that the thing that I struggle with is that I then ask myself and say, so if I go back, you know, 30, 40, 50 years, was gender-based violence as prevalent as it is today? And I can't find the stats, but my guess would be no. So then I would ask myself and say, so what has changed? I mean, I know the views. I'll give you one simple quick one. We go to Durban with my father. We walk into a church, and there's a priest and then there's an assistant who's a woman. And my dad refused to be given communion by her. And he literally stepped back and said, pass, and then he'll take from the guy who came after her. And afterwards, when we left, he said to me, listen, you guys go to the car. I need to talk to this priest and explain to him that you can't have this. So he was totally against women serving in church leadership. But I cannot think in my childhood of somebody who respected, was more chivalrous. You know, my mother was well taken care of, and you know, whether it was driving, buying a car, paying the bond, in our culture, you know, he would pay the bond. It wasn't 50-50. He would buy her the car. So as much as you would find attributes that would point to patriarchy, but it wasn't abusive. You know, it was played out in a different role. So hence I ask myself and I say, so what has actually changed? And here's something I want to suggest, and you can shoot me later. Let's take affirmative action in BEE. We all understand that there was a need for affirmative action in BEE. Let's say we're not arguing about that. Mm-hmm. But my question to you would be this. Did government say, we're going to introduce a BEE policy, an affirmative action policy, and then say to white South Africans, this is the need for the policy, this is how it's going to affect you, and how we're going to help you cope, adjust, and deal with that reality? I say this because the perception that what I want to put on the table is that since 1990 or 94, the role between men and women in terms of ability to earn and all of those things has changed dramatically. I mean, I could find numerous studies that said, women in post-apartheid South Africa have benefited tremendously in terms of careers, salaries, and those opportunities. So the question then becomes is, how has government helped men understand that changing reality, and could that then be leading to some of the challenges. Because if you go back in time, you would find that even in deep apartheid, you know, men could come and live in the cities, they could come and work, and women stayed in the rural areas. So the man was always a breadwinner. So in many households, the husband, the wife, and the man earned far more than the wife did, and he had far greater opportunities. If you look at BEE now and you want to start a company, you'll be scored more if you have women, if you have youth, and all of those issues. So whilst things have changed, they've almost changed in some ways at the preference of women over men. And I think men have struggled to come to grips with that. Now, please understand me, I'm not saying this is, you know, the cause of it and this is definitively everything, but I do believe that that change has played out very differently. I meet lots of couples that we talk to at home and we counsel, and very often I'll find men will struggle with a wife who earns more, a wife who has a higher position, because somehow this is very different to how they were brought up and what they expected. And the dynamics at home change differently. Men will tell you that, you know what, my wife will tell me this is my car, these are my children. And it almost becomes a very adversarial relationship. So my question is, when we transitioned and rightly we had more women, you know, going and getting tertiary education, increasing, you know, if you look at the increases in salaries when government promulgated minimum salaries, that would affect, let's say, domestic workers and so forth. What have we done to make men understand that the reality is changing and you need to be able to deal with it? We have a ministry, for instance, now for women and children. So again, I tend to think that we look at the symptom, not the cause. So if we say that women are feeling hard done by, there's gender-based violence, and we have a ministry to cater for women, what is there to sit and say, how do we help men adjust to this reality? Because life has changed. Things have changed. The dynamics have changed. I'm not saying the previous dynamics were correct, but they have changed. Now, are we helping men understand that?
Just to understand this, so are you saying that a lot of this comes from, it might have been a patriarchal, but obviously wasn't about abuse. It was about elements of control, from what you're saying, because women didn't have a place. But what's happened now is that control has shifted or leaked to cause violence as men struggle to still feel in control. Would that be a fair summary?
I'm not saying this is the only cause, but I'm saying
I'm just trying to understand instances
where people are raised, where it may be just pure violence, where somebody wants to harm somebody. So I'm not disputing those, but I'm simply saying there's quite a big element that we're overlooking.
Yes, so, but are you saying, Luba, that the patriarchy that was,
In the past,
well, we need to deal with that. Is that because if it the world we live in, that it can't function anymore because women in many cases do earn more than men, and women are ordained ministers, and they don't necessarily need a man to take care of them. Isn't that so that reality in the world today is quite different.
Yes, it's very different. So just by way of one example, I had a friend who once said to me, Luba, you know, my wife has a senior position. She gets approached by an international company and made an offer. And by the time she comes to me, she says to me, here's an offer, what do you think? They discuss it, and she says, well, I've accepted, and we're moving. You know, if you don't want to move with me, I'm going overseas. I'm taking up this post, let's say, in Canada. Now, typically, that would not have happened in the past. There would have been a discussion, and the man would feel that he had a veto right. Now, understand me, I'm not trying to protect the previous system, but I'm simply saying there would have been a discussion where the man felt that his view mattered, whereas now he's feeling that his view doesn't matter. You know, I've met a very young couple where, you know, the husband says, my wife has a PhD and I may have only a junior degree, and I feel that my view does not count at home. So when we talk about what car to buy, it doesn't matter. I've seen friends where, for instance, the wife earns a lot more, she'll go and buy herself a Merc SUV. but there's no consultation. That's the car she wants. Whereas previously, in the African culture, it would have been the husband going out and saying, this is the car that I think we should get. He would have typically earned more to be, have been able to buy that car. Now his wife earns a lot more. She can buy that car. And worse, there's no consultation. And I think men then struggle with that reality. That this is how South Africa is, that my wife will earn more than I do. And my wife may have a position that's far senior to mine.
So Luba,
and yes?
Okay, I'm just trying to make sense of what you're saying. All right. You're saying things have seemingly changed now because the power dynamics, economically or financially have changed as opposed to the past. That's my understanding of what you're saying, right?
And men have not been able to deal with that.
They haven't transitioned.
So I find it,
but not in all cases.
I find it problematic that now it's whoever else's duty to teach men, you know, how to basically get rid of that ego. It doesn't make sense.
No, but isn't that just a reality? It doesn't matter if it's our duty to teach our...
I hear you. You may say that it's nobody's duty, but all I'm saying is, if you have a problem, and I speak from experience where I see these men. Now, we can simply say, well, look, no, nobody's going to teach you that the world has changed. Get with it. Mm. But the reality is that men are not getting on with it. So somewhere along the line, now, men don't necessarily congregate and get into groups and say, guys, I think there are challenges. How do we deal with them? Now, unfortunately, you know, we can be blunt and say we have egos, and our egos will prevent us from talking about these issues. So, yes, I agree with you. In the ideal world, nobody should be teaching men to deal with the issue. But the reality is, if that problem is there,
so how do we
not
break,
deal with that
yes,
issue.
Of course
the same as if I were to say to you the issue of let's say, racism, the issue of affirmative action. Who should tell a 21-year-old white kid that, I'm sorry, affirmative action's in the workplace? And if he doesn't understand, do I simply say, well, you're white, get on with it? Or do I need to say, let me explain to you why we're in this situation? Right? So, you may not agree with it, you may not like it, but the reality is...
But how do we break... Luba, how do we break the cycle? Because you've got men who think like that, having sons who they bringing up. How do we stop? How do we intervene in that cycle to say this is how it needs to change? Because we're very, very clearly not winning this war. There's absolutely no doubt about it. I think we might be a little bit further along because at least we can have these conversations. And I think the gender-based violence, in terms of even a discussion, was so much avoided in the past. So now we actually can have this discussion, and you can say, listen, from my experience, this is what I've seen, and this could be a problem. I don't think it's only the black community. I think it's all communities. We were sitting, when we sit shiver after somebody passed us away, as you know, a few weeks ago we were sitting for my father, and it's three boys, my three brothers and a sister, and we were laughing at the time that we sat for my mother 3 years ago. My sister said then it was the four of us, it was four kids and my father, and my father would say things to my sister like, you know, will you just get the boys something to eat or something like that, and we were laughing, we were saying, you know, she's actually a mourner as well, you know, she doesn't even go and get the boys, you know, because the boys have just lost their mother. I mean, never mind that my sister had just lost her mother. But there was no way we could get this guy to actually see how ludicrous, offensive, outdated, outmoded it was, that we actually all found it funny. So the fact is that we could laugh about it meant that my kids could hear us laughing about it and understand how that needs to change, and that.
Let me throw this at you, because I know what I'm saying may sound insensitive, but what I'm saying is that men will not self-correct. So by example, I have several men that I'm talking to whose marriages are falling apart because of this issue. And their response has been, I can't deal with this. I go out and I drink and I come back at 2 o'clock in the morning. And as a result, the marriage is falling apart. Now, we may blame them and say they should have adjusted, but the reality is that they haven't adjusted. And to add to this, to compound to this, is the fact that the way a significant generation, my generation and older, and maybe some who are younger than me, have been raised, is that you don't talk about these issues. You don't come home or you sit with your wife or your partner and say, listen, honey, I have a challenge. Let's discuss this issue. You bottle it up. So, for instance, one guy said to me, Luba, I tried to compete with my wife. right? So I would try and do as much in business to try and equal what she was bringing in. And he couldn't because the gap was too big. So what became a casualty was a marriage and their children involved. So I'm saying, I'm seeing this playing out. And yes, we may say the system was wrong and how men are responding to it is not correct. But should we not try and find ways to help and open the discussion and say to guys, look, it's okay. Because I had to say to these guys, if you're taking a joint income, a family, one partner earning more than the other one is beneficial to the family. Stop competing with your wife. You don't need to compete with her. But that had to come from me as an outsider. He didn't know me that well. And when I sat him down, I had to look him in the face and say, look, get over yourself. Now, those are conversations you need to have. But those conversations aren't being had enough. And hence I'm saying our ego prevents us from talking and also culturally, we don't generally talk because in the African culture, whether you've got problems in marriage or whatever, who do you generally go and speak with? You go and speak with the elders. No, not the psychiatrist. Now, what do the elders know? So if I'm going to go to a village and sit with a bunch of old timers who have no concept of what I'm talking about, what's their view going to be? Pull your wife in line. You, the head of the family. How does that help? I asked the same guy and he said to me, Luba, if I go to my uncles and I say to them, here's a problem, they'll say you are failing to control your wife. Because they're going to revert to the old patriarchy system, which doesn't address this issue.
And Luba,
so the man is looking for answers, doesn't know where to find them.
I particularly want to deal with when you opened your statement, you predicated it with the fact that gender-based violence is back in the back then, 50 years ago or so, wasn't as rife as it is now. And you based it on the fact that, obviously patriarchy and all that stuff. But I'm of the view that, it was just as rife. It was just, now.
Accepted.
Yes, it was accepted. Mm. And women right now are at the point where we're done keeping quiet. We're done, keeping quiet, standing with it, crying in pain, going to the family dealing with it. I think those dynamics have changed. Socially,
and family sending you back to
yes.
the husband because it's the husband.
Those dynamics have changed. It doesn't necessarily mean that, it wasn't just as rife back then.
I would differ and say violence has always been there in society. But I think the gender-based part, hence I'm saying if I go back and I look at my parents and the older generations, violence was there, but when it did occur, it was always frowned upon. And it was not as rife. I believe that part of the problem is that we've become far more brutal and far more aggressive in all forms of our behavior in South Africa. And, but certainly you will, if you talk to anybody who's grown up in more rural settings, they would say to you, one, if you society built ways and said, if you dare touch your wives, let's say we take, for instance, Amkhosa, say in the Lobola scheme of things, if you dare lay a hand on your wife, she was entitled to go home and say, look, he has ill-treated me in whatever form, a meeting would be called where you would be summoned to that meeting to explain yourself. And not just you, it would be the elders. The families get together to understand what had gone wrong, what had happened. And wow. If need be, those who practice with Teleka, they would be entitled to come and take their daughter and carry her home until that family presented themselves to discuss the issue. So I'm saying, yes, it was there, but there were means to kind of deal with that issue. But I'm simply saying there's an added dimension that's
and
come to it.
Means,
so I can never say to you gender-based violence was never there.
Even those means
But I'm simply saying
enough.
It was not as prevalent.
That's interesting because Lindiwe says maybe in some instances people didn't even recognize that it was violence because it was
exactly.
so much the norm.
Yeah.
Howard,
that is the, I have a cousin who's grown up in KZN, the township, who would say to me, Luba, growing up, this is contemporary now in the 90s and the 2000s, that hitting your girlfriend was considered the norm. Just keep reminding her who's the boss. So she'd done nothing wrong. So you almost just gave her a nice clap every now and then.
True.
So
that
yes, that's certainly
true.
There. Wow. Right? But that is different from the traditional rural kind of one. This is in the townships. Hence I'm saying there's many forms of it. I was merely addressing one. So hitting somebody for no apparent reason is quite acceptable in some areas. And using violence to remind her that you are the boss is done. And I'm talking of people who are in their 20s, not 40 year olds.
Which is very relevant. Luba, so given your hypothesis, how do you think we start to address we start to address it. And obviously there's not only one, there's not only one angle. And as Rene says, violence can also come sometimes from personality disorders. Absolutely right. I think there's a whole range of reasons, spectrums, et cetera. But you're focusing on one, as you said earlier, a possible angle. Following your hypothesis, how do you believe then that we can go about addressing it to denormalize it, I guess?
I think we have to talk about the changing reality of what society is and the role that, for instance, my partner or my wife is not inferior to me. She's supportive and we're both supportive of each other. Because my challenge is that, Howard, men are not going to express it. And what we do when we say men are trash, it paints every guy. And therefore, those who are willing to say something then keep quiet and say, well, you've already pronounced me guilty, so I'm going to say nothing. And what you often see is men rallying and marching and saying, you know, not in my name. But we're not addressing the issue because we feel obliged to come out and hold placards and hold flags and saying that we condemn gender-based violence. But the question is, are we understanding what's leading to the gender-based violence? What are the causes? And I think we need to spend more time understanding the causes of it so that we can address those, rather than it's good to declare solidarity and say I'm against something. And for me, the challenge has been, how do you move people from popular slogans of us going out in Harley Davidsons and saying, I condemn gender-based violence, to saying, how do you encourage men to talk about these issues so that we confront the reality and see where we have gone wrong and where we are going wrong and how we can change these issues and support one another? Hence, I'm saying in my limited field, when I've seen men and I've had to sit and talk to them and I've had to sit and talk to both parties and often say to them, you know, he's wrong in his response, but you are also reinforcing his response. So, Howard, simply put, I think we need to put more focus on men, not to say that they're innocent, but to help them understand that the world that they thought existed or they were used to has changed, and that it is perfectly acceptable and expected, and they're expected to actually champion, you know, the opposite gender in terms of work and at home and all of those issues. And that you need to redefine and understand that life has changed. But it's a conversation that must be had, going to help.
Oh, I couldn't agree more with that. Absolutely, because it's not women who are perpetuating the violence. So to have the conversation to the exclusion of men is most definitely not going to achieve its goals. I'd love your thoughts. I know that it's a difficult, I knew we wouldn't get a lot of interaction on the subject because it's one of those conversations that actually are very, very difficult to have, because none of us want to say the wrong thing, and but yet we need to have these conversations. And Luba, I applaud you for raising this and putting yourself out there with a view that is an interesting one, and at least making sure that we do have these conversations on air. I do think it's important to note as well, though, that it's, I mean, I know you're giving, this is the Africa Report, you're giving a perspective from the black community, or your view on gender-based violence within the black community. But the conversations around patriarchy and the way in which women have traditionally been viewed is not limited to the black community. This is something that cuts absolutely across the board, and it is something that we all need to make ourselves aware of, as you've done today, and we need to make our kids aware of it, because if we don't, we just simply pass it on to the next generation. Luba Mayegisa, thank you. Excellent conversation, and I really appreciate you raising it. It's